Welcome to Just a Taste. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. Joining us today is food and beverage industry expert, David Donnan. David is a partner with A.T. Kearney in the consumer products and retail practice, in which he leads the global food and beverage sector. Dave has extensive experience advising clients across a broad set of strategic issues, including corporate strategy, merger integration, supply chain strategies and optimization, brand growth, positioning, and market entry strategies. During his career, Dave has managed operating companies and run food plants, giving him a unique perspective to client engagements. Dave, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. So, we covered a little bit there in the intro, but just tell us a little bit from your view about A.T. Kearney and the services you and your organization provide to the industry.
So we are global strategy and operations consulting firms, which means that we help companies improve performance, enter new markets, help them with their supply chain, procurement, manufacturing, a variety of management type of issues. And we have a variety of industries that we work in, one of them being consumer and retail, which is the largest industry practice within A.T. Kearney on a global basis, and the food and beverage industry, which includes everything from agriculture through to retail and restaurant, is one of our large practice areas.
Great. And do you have any specific areas of specialty yourself, or are you a little bit more generous and generalist? I know you have so much experience.
Well, yeah, my career path has been somewhat nonlinear, that I've run companies, I've run food plants, I've been in consulting, I've been in advisory and mergers and acquisitions. But recently, I've been focusing a lot on sort of startup industries, startup companies in the food and agriculture space, looking at helping them, you know, land their right product line, product innovation, and around getting the right supply management, supply market, supply chain to get their products to market in high quality, consistent manner.
Right. And we're going to dive into a few of those as we go along here. I know that the hemp CBD industry is one that you're monitoring. So we're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
And then we'll also take a look back at your very prescient perspective, The Battle for Dinner, which you wrote in 2013, and we'll chat a little bit about that and, you know, see what you got right, see what you got maybe wrong a little bit too. But in the meantime, I think you just got back, and we were there as well with Chef's Best, from the Fancy Food Show, and you hosted a roundtable discussion there about what's for dinner, fighting for the 6 p.m. mindshare. I think in my house, it's lucky if we're eating at 6 p.m., where something, but I'm sure that's part of the discussion. What did you learn there that maybe you didn't know prior?
Well, I think, you know, we had great panelists from Uber Eats, from HelloFresh, and from Raley's, the grocery store in California, talking about all of the different meal options you have when it's, you know, 6 o'clock, and the first question that goes across the United States in every household, which is, what do you want for dinner? And the answer is either, I don't know, what do you want, or nothing's in the fridge, what can we do? And so it's all about, I have nothing planned to go to the pantry for, and I don't want to go to a restaurant. I want to stay home and watch my Netflix series. So what do I do? And it's all about how meal delivery, Uber Eats, you know, the Grubhub, Plate Dash, you know, et cetera, are coming to the market, about the meal kits, you know, whether it's HelloFresh or Blue Apron or others, and then grab and go from the grocerant or the grocery store restaurant. And Rayleigh's talking about that. So what we learned different was that there is, you know, a movement from the meal kits from a subscription model where you get the same every, you know, three meals a week, to more moving towards retail, where you've got retailers like Mariano's, like Amazon Go, like various others like Kroger that are offering meal kits in the store where you can actually grab them on a, you know, just-in-time basis. So if you, you know, are at the grocery store, you can pick up the meal for tonight. And we also learned about meal delivery and how that is changing as well, where we're getting, you know, we've got McDonald's is using Uber Eats quite extensively, as well as Subway and others that you wouldn't expect to be on the meal delivery side. But as I said, at 2 o'clock in the morning, if you want a McFlurry, you can get one. and there is great demand for those as well.
And I think if we were to break down dinner now, I think that there's one trend. I'm not even sure if it's a trend. I think it's an institution now, which is that the traditional dinner that I know I grew up on, and I would assume you as well, which is your mom, who typically was more of a stay-at-home mom, cooked dinner, and we sat down and we had our dinner, and 45 minutes around the table, and we certainly weren't allowed up until we finished. I would say, maybe you did pizza once a week because mom didn't want to do that. So we know that era is effectively gone. I don't think it's coming back with dual income households and a variety of other factors, just kids being more involved in
Well,
extracurricular activities and everything, right?
also 62% of households now are singles and couples. So,
Ah, yeah.
the traditional mom, dad, two kids is a minority now. And so, the majority of households are singles, couples, either baby boomers that are empty nesters, people that are maybe a single mom and her child, or millennials that may have not had children yet. So a large portion there that has a different eating process and a different quantity that they eat. And so this fits right in.
So I'm curious how, if the effect, let me put it this way. I'm fearful that my thoughts on it are coming from a bit of a bubble. So our family, and by no means are we rich, but we're well enough to have some decisions. We're willing to go get a rotisserie chicken for $8 down the street
Right.
because we don't have time to cook. So to buy, a pound and a half of chicken for $7 and need to cook it versus spending another $2 and having it cooked is extremely valuable and compelling value proposition for us. However, I also recognize that $8 for chicken, and then you're throwing in a few, maybe I've got some corn that I'm going to cook, and maybe I grab one of those nice loaves of bread. I'm at $15 maybe by the end of it, and recognizing that that is not for everyone. And I would also add into that, Uber Eats is probably not. I love Uber Eats. However, I realize that I'm paying more when I do that. Given that you have different just income levels, being honest here, how does dinner fall within those? Is there still segments that are adhering to the cook at home, and then there's other segments that are just perhaps still cooking at home, but it's prepared meals that are almost exclusively now relying on a third party to do most of the heavy lifting for them? And how do you see the future for that?
Well, I think it's probably less dealing with social economic strata. Obviously, people that are lower income will have a harder time paying for added value-added services, and people that are higher income can do it. But then again, people that are higher income may like cooking as a hobby and see cooking as a discovery process and are following the chefs. And people with less means are probably working. Both husband and wife or the people in the household are all working, and so when they get home, there's just not much time. But I think what you've just described, a rotisserie chicken is probably a very inexpensive source of cooked protein, and so people buy a rotisserie chicken that can last maybe two or three meals, and then add in, canned or frozen vegetables or some other things. You can put together a pretty good, nutritious meal, cost effectively by doing that. And so, looking at how to get the protein in a way that is cost effective, whether it's a rotisserie chicken or buying, hamburger and cooking it up, and then, getting your vegetables frozen or otherwise to cook, those are the way we're seeing a lot of meals being prepped. So it's a combination of cooking from scratch and prepared.
Shifting gears a little bit, one of the areas that you're monitoring is the emerging and exploding, really, hemp and CBD industry. So we're located out here in California. So being a little bit more progressive on that front, we're a bit familiar with it. Yet now we're starting to see, you know, it's moved from illegal to medicinal to recreational. And now we're starting to see it really find its way mainstreaming itself into the food and beverage industry. So I want to get into that. First, though, go ahead and explain for our listeners what hemp is, what CBD is, and how it's different from, you know, traditional cannabis products that we know of, which is THC-based. Let's go ahead and cover that for everyone.
So the cannabis plant really has sort of two major strains. One is the one we associate with marijuana, which has a higher level of euphoria with it and the drug-related aspects. And then the other strain is hemp, which has very little, minimal, almost none of that. What those things are cannabinoids. And cannabinoids are the chemicals within the cannabis plant, which have a variety of different functions and different attributes to our body. We have an endocannabinoid system in our body, which basically deals with homeostasis, it deals with nerve endings, it deals with a variety of things. And the cannabinoids are natural chemicals found in the cannabis plant that interact with it. Hemp is a product that has specifically been bred to have a low level of THC, and THC is the cannabinoid which is associated with the high or the euphoria of cannabis. CBD, cannabidiol, is the other major cannabinoid within cannabis, and it is what hemp has the majority of. So hemp will be mostly CBD with some other cannabinoids, CBN and CBG and others like that, but then, you know, very, very little, in fact, less than 0.3% THC. So hemp, to a large degree, is non-euphoric. It is, you know, got the CBD cannabinoid in it. It does not have the euphoria cannabinoid. It won't get you high. And then CBD is that chemical which is now getting a lot of attributes associated with it, things like stress relief, anti-inflammatory, being used, medical marijuana is using CBD from everything, aspects to helping with psoriasis and skin conditions to anti-inflammatory, like gut issues like irritable bowel syndrome or colitis. And even we're seeing CBD used in things like anti-seizure control as well with the new drugs that's come out. So CBD has got all of these very positive attributes associated with it. The biggest problem is that there's most of it is anecdotal evidence rather than clinical trials, because cannabis for the last 70 years has been a Schedule One or a controlled substance. Since the 70s, it's been a Schedule One, which means that it's the most heinous of narcotics. And hemp just in December 20th, 2018, with the Farm Bill of 2018, the president signed, hemp was taken off the controlled substance list and is now legal in all 50 states to grow hemp and is legal to transport hemp across the state lines. And CBD can be extracted from that hemp.
Right. So a couple of things in a full disclosure, our family uses CBD regularly. My wife has had significant bladder spasm issues that it has helped her immensely with. Great. We've used it as a mild sleep aid as well. Again, to just echo, this conversation moving forward is not related to the THC, which has the psychoactive properties, and is starting to find its way into some food and beverage. I will point that out. In California, you can buy THC infused kombucha, wine, and then obviously things like chocolates and other things as well.
But only at licensed dispensaries.
Correct. I recently learned that I was very surprised that the largest hemp and CBD producing state, don't quote me on it, but I know it's one of the largest, is actually Kentucky, which no one would think of because it's a red state. And in general, people are thinking of blue states to really paint with the broad brush here as more interested in this. But as a CBD executive told me when I gave him a quizzical look, he said, well, Mitch McConnell likes money and for his state.
And hemp, hemp has been used for years in clothing and in rope. So it's not just being for a medical side. I mean, hemp has been a very I mean, hemp's been around for 2,000 years, and it's been used throughout history to make clothing and other products.
Right. So where it stands now, I believe, is, you know, for the most part, I'm seeing CBD. You can buy it at in water, in other things, at licensed dispensaries, or in pill or liquid form. However, not at all retailers.
Right.
And I want to know what your thoughts are on this, because where I can buy it right now is places like, I believe Sprouts has it. I know Jimbo's has it. A lot of the specialty retailers, but the Kroger's and the Safeways are not on board with it yet. I imagine that's something to do with legality across states or whatnot. But why is that? And when is that going to change?
Okay, so this is where we get into the legal conundrum. So there are 10 states where recreational or adult use cannabis is legal. You know, California, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, you know, Alaska, etc. In those states, you have licensed dispensaries that are licensed to distribute marijuana, the full euphoric air marijuana, in a dispensary store. In addition, there's 30 states that offer medical marijuana, which, again, with a doctor's order, you can get THC, CBD for medical conditions, as you described before. The CBD that you're seeing, infused water, CBD, you know, infused gums, and you know, lotions, cosmetics, etc., that are extracted from cannabis. That's the cannabis that has THC and CBD. Extracting the CBD portion of that can be sold in dispensaries. So they'll be sold at either adult use dispensaries or in medical marijuana dispensaries. Quite often. Now the kind of dichotomy and the legal conundrum comes out on the fact that hemp now is legal. It's no longer a controlled substance, and you can extract CBD from hemp. Well, CBD from hemp and CBD from cannabis, although being chemically almost identical, under our laws are treated quite differently. So in the legalized state, I can sell CBD-infused drinks and food and cosmetics through a registered dispensary under the Marijuana Control Act of my state. Federally, because hemp is now legal federally, and CBD theoretically would be legal, however, although it is legal, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, have not yet approved CBD as an ingredient in food. Nor have they approved it in cosmetics. They are saying no to it. They just haven't done it yet. And with the current government shutdown, things have slowed down immensely. So what it is that although you may see some CBD-infused products, creams, lotions, maybe even some CBD water in specialty stores, the mainstream retailers are holding back until FDA gives a ruling. Because FDA theoretically could say that CBD is a drug and therefore goes under FDA rulings and requires a lot more clinical trials before it can be used. Or they could say CBD is a supplement and then it will be sold like a supplement, like St. John's wort or omega-3 or turmeric and any others. So that's where everybody's sort of waiting and seeing, and they're waiting to see how the FDA will eventually rule. And the unfortunate part is we're being slowed down because of other issues.
So it's just in this no man's land. And,
correct.
You know, what's interesting is you have, and I'm not sure if there's been any other instance of this where you have, as you said, it's been difficult to do research. I know in Europe they've done. I know that down at UCSD here in San Diego, that there's some interesting research going on. However, the anecdotal evidence is overwhelming. I'll give a quick example.
Right.
I have gotten bitten by a mosquito, taken CBD-infused a salve, rubbed it on it, and watched the red bump disappear. So yep. I don't need a peer-reviewed journal to tell me
and that's, I think, the anecdotal evidence. Everybody has a friend or a neighbor or a relative that's used it to some degree, and you know, for pain control, for swelling, for whatever. The research, as previously said, because it was a Schedule I controlled substance, no university, nobody could do research on cannabis. And so, you know, we've had a vacuum of any clinical research for the last 50 years. And the only research that we're seeing has come out is from Israel and Canada. And so Canada has done some pretty extensive studies looking at the use of cannabis for epilepsy control, for irritable bowel syndrome. And right now, McMaster University is looking at how the cannabinoids can be used for pain control as a replacement to opioids. So that's coming out, but the U.S. is kind of behind the scenes there. Now, try to catch up quickly, et cetera, but it's still, we're in this murky area.
So where do you see it moving forward? Is it, now I'm not trying to ask you to get out your crystal ball about the federal government. Let's skip all that. But related to the food and beverage industry, is it something that is going to, you know, remain in pill form and, or maybe, you know, the solves and stuff, but is primarily going to be, you know, in those aisles, or is it something that is going to, you know, find its way into, you know, more of our daily, you know, food and beverage intake? What's just your feeling of how, I don't know if disruptive is the word, but how included it will be?
Yeah, so a lot depends on how the FDA rules, whether it's a drug or not. And that will obviously limit or accelerate certain products. What we see, though, happening is that, you know, if cannabis, so the euphoric cannabis that has THC and CBD, if it's taken off of Schedule I controlled substance, that will then open up the market even further, because that will allow banks and transportation companies and others to get involved, where right now it's illegal for them to get involved. And even if it's legal in California, a federal bank cannot get involved. So that's going to be a big trigger as well. There's a series of what we'll call milestones or triggers that we're looking for to determine how things go. However, if you look forward, I mean, will CBD just become another supplement like turmeric or St. John's Wort or anything else? I mean, you know, will it just be a product that you take by pill, or maybe, you know, infused, like turmeric is infused in some food items? That may be the case as well. Or you could actually see things like, for example, sports drinks having CBD. So having some sort of a CBD in it that would help reduce the after effects of a workout, either pain or swelling. And, you know, having infused drinks like that as well. So those are all products that are kind of sitting on the edges right now, on the sidelines, all waiting for some of the regulatory issues to be resolved. The one I love is, and again, this is not a CBD product, but it's one that has THC in it as well. And this is why the alcoholic beverage companies have been investing in the cannabis companies, is a non-alcoholic beer that has a THC-CBD combination in it, that has the same buzz, the same euphoria as beer, but it has no impact on your liver because there's no alcohol in it, no hangover, and it also doesn't result in you know, the dehydration that alcohol brings. So a lot of people are looking at this saying, you know, here's a healthier version of beer. Also zero calories.
If you and I could only go back to college, Dave.
Exactly.
No, it's fascinating what's going on, and you know, all the while there are you know, perception hurdles to get over, you know, a branding challenge there, and you know, even out here in California, where it really is pretty widely accepted at this point, you know, you could still be. I was in a meeting or a presentation rather, where one of the executives of, I think, the largest producer of CBD was presenting, and half the room knew exactly what he's talking about. You know, I shared a story of how Assolve has helped my sinuses after years and years and years of problems, and right. Just rubbing it on there. And I couldn't believe it. I literally went to the manufacturer of it, who I know, and I said, you're never going to believe this, but I've spent years trying to get my sinus is under control. And he said, Scott, do you know how many stories I've heard like that? So half the room
you
had
rub
that.
It on your nose?
So it is, it contains a lot of things. I rub it a little bit. I put a little dab underneath kind of my nose, just at the bottom of my nostrils. Yeah. And it definitely has eucalyptus and other things in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it does have THC.
They only can buy it in California.
Yeah, I don't possibly see how you would... you would get a high from it, but it has some. And I rub it underneath my eyes and you know, along above my cheekbone.
Yep.
And I have had, Dave, the worst allergy sinus situations you can imagine. And typically my pattern would be, I deny it because I don't want to take, loratadine and, or any of those because it makes me spacey. And then my sinuses get so bad that I am almost a, let's put it this way. My wife doesn't like me because I'm constantly I'm constantly needing to bring it up. And then eventually I give in and I start taking the over-the-counter medications, which do work, but they put me in a fog and I have to take them for about 2 weeks. So this whole episode usually takes about a month and a half to 2 months. And it usually happens to me 2 to 3 times a year. Well, this stuff works. Okay. And he said to me, he said, Scott, that's why I'm in this. Think about the billions of dollars of, you know, people using nasal sprays and everything else, whereas something like this, you know, might not work for everyone, but could work.
Right.
So
and I think that's the important thing is it might not work for everyone because some people have it working tremendously well and others see no effect at all. Mm-hmm. The same thing with dosage. People say, well, how much should I take? Should I take 5 milligrams, 10 milligrams? Each person is different. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where the medical science, although, you know, we're looking for medical evidence and all that, where what the area of research needs to go is, you know, really how do we prescribe that? How do we understand, other than just through discovery, how do people understand how to use it, where to use it, et cetera?
Right. And we're all just experimenting, which is kind of right. Weird and scary in itself. My wife uses it for, I mentioned her interstitial cystitis, which is a very debilitating, painful event when it occurs, and it helps her. So at this presentation, half the room had those stories, half the room, and it certainly would have been divided based on, I would say, age, was just having a hard time wrapping their head around the legality of this. And they go saying to these other, you people use this stuff? And we're going, yeah, we use this. And this is all, you know, a room of professionals. And so it's just this perception standpoint. I think if I told my mom I used it, she'd probably disown me. And I'd be like, no, well, no, mommy, but I mean,
one of the fastest growing age groups is 65 and older because, for pain control, arthritis control, swelling. Right now in Florida, there's seniors tours of the medical marijuana dispensaries where they take them down and show them all the products.
Well, we'll see where we are in a year, Dave, and maybe we'll have you back to share your insights. But it looks like you're all over this topic, and I'm sure everyone's, you're either in or you're watching it really closely if you're in the food and beverage industry. Because
correct.
Yeah, we know InBev are and all them.
Yeah, the next 2 years will be a bit of a rocky road because we're dealing with basically the startup of an industry. This is not a new product or a new category. This is a new industry. Mm-hmm. So you've got that whole movement. You've got the whole movement around the regulatory side and how quickly it'll catch up to where consumers want to be. And then the third side of it is the black market, which is interesting. I mean, we've got a very vital and operating black market in cannabis for many years. And what they've found in Canada is that the regulatory wasn't able to keep up, so the dispensaries weren't opening fast enough. Demand was there, and so the black market actually expanded rather than contracted, which was the government's initial goal.
Wow, interesting. Excellent. I want to thank you for your time. You've been very generous with it today. Maybe we'll check back as this evolves, which it is on a daily basis. So I think, well, if the government opens up, maybe it'll move a little faster here. But all those jokes aside, we know Constellation Brands is, I would call, hedging their bet by having some.
And so is ABM, InBev, and Heineken, Altria just got involved as well. I mean, there's lots of things going on.
Yeah, and I would suspect Pfizer's got a pretty close eye on it all as well. So we'll see where all of them come in, and then we'll see where if it makes it into, just food, like you said, sports drinks and stuff. It's pretty mind-boggling.
Right.
So again, thanks for your time, Dave. I would certainly encourage anyone to take a look at your firm for guidance in this area and other areas as well.
Yeah, we have two reports that are on our website at atcarney.com. One is sort of it's called The Next Gold Rush, Cannabis and Consumer Products. So it looks at different consumer products and how they're around health and beauty, body care, beverages, foods, and how they're evolving. And then we also have called the Cannabis Opportunity, where we did a survey of 2,000 consumers, 1,000 in Canada, 1,000 in the U.S., about their acceptance of cannabis-related products in consumer products.
Excellent. Well, encourage folks to check those out. And that website is atkearney.com. Again, thanks for joining us and sharing your insights into not only CBD, but touching on dinner as well.
Thank you.
Take care, dude. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on Just a Taste, a Chef's Best production. Join us again next time as we talk to more experts in marketing, retail, and production in the food and beverage industry. You can always visit us at chefsbest.com to learn more.